Samuel 9. 2 Samuel 9. There's a gentleman that's in this passage tonight, and I don't know why, but I have never had a problem pronouncing his name. That is not the case most of the time when I come across some of these biblical names. When I come across a passage that I'm going to be preaching from, I usually try to hang out with Alexander Scorby at least three or four different times during the week so that I can pronounce the names halfway correct. And every time I think about a name like Mephibosheth, I think about the story of an old-time evangelist. Some of you that have been saved for quite some time, you'll remember there was an evangelist many years ago named Gypsy Smith. He was a gypsy that got saved and God called him to preach. And he was not an educated man. He probably did not even graduate from high school. And so somebody asked him one time, said, "Gypsy, let me ask you a question. When you come to those names in the Bible, how do you say those names?" He said, "Well, let me tell you a secret that I learned a long time ago." He said, "What I do," he said, "I read the scripture until I get to the name, and I just kind of stop and make a few comments. And after I've made a few comments, then what I do is I start after the names, and I pick up there, and so I just skip the names." And so when I think of the word Mephibosheth, I think that I'll be able to say that maybe not five times quickly, but I want us to look at a man tonight that is a picture of grace. He is a picture of the mercy of God. And can I tell you that the same condition that he was in, you and I were in that same condition before we met Christ. And so I want us to look at our passage tonight, and we pick up in verse number 1, and what you've got is you've got David that is just evidently just sitting around. Maybe he's looking over the city that's down below him. Maybe he is sitting by a fire and just contemplating early on his life. And one of the memories that come flooding to his mind is his friend Jonathan. And you know from my preaching in 1 Samuel a couple of years ago, you know that Jonathan and David were buddies. The Bible says that they were so close that their souls were knit together. And so they had coveted with each other. Jonathan was the heir apparent to his son or to his father Saul. But yet Jonathan knew that it was God's will for David to be the king over Israel once his father passed off the scene. And so he was willing to humble himself. He was willing to step away from being the king to being able to be kind of a vice regent, someone that was just under the king. And he was willing to take a subservient position. And so King David had that kind of friendship with Jonathan. Jonathan saved his life. Jonathan connected with him as far as protection on several occasions. And so Jonathan is now dead. At the end of Samuel, we found that Jonathan dies as he's fighting side by side with his father. And they are killed, and the Philistines are basically just ravaging the people of God. And so Jonathan dies, and now here we are, we fast forward several years. I have no idea how many years it is. I'm just guessing that it could be as many as 15, 20 years from when Jonathan died. The reason I say that is because the age of the man that we have in our passage tonight, Mephibosheth, when his father died, was 5. But yet in our passage, we see on two different occasions that he himself has a small son. And so perhaps Mephibosheth is somewhere maybe in his late 20s now. And so we see that David is sitting around one night, and he is just thinking about Jonathan, and he's thinking about the covenant that he made with Jonathan. And all of a sudden, he just has this thought. I wonder if there's anybody left in the lineage of Saul. And he just begins to think, how could I find that out? I mean, it wasn't like they could go down to the computer and look up ancestry.com and say, well, let's see how many people are left from Saul's tree. What you've got is you've got historians that basically would keep records, but it was usually just a very official type thing. And every time I think about that, I think about maybe a hall of births and a hall of deaths down at a local county somewhere. So David had this idea. And so let's just look as we go through the passage, and we'll pick up on some things that I want you to look at tonight. So we'll look at verses 1 through 4. And I want you to see the first thing tonight. I want you to see the compassion for Mephibosheth. The compassion that was given to him. Is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul that I may show him a kindness for Jonathan's sake? Kindness is this chapter. And may I say that when David says this, can you see the tenderness in the king's heart? I challenge you to find any other story of David that has more compassion than this one. Now, there's times when he's doing great feats for God. He killed Goliath. He's killed Philistines by the thousands. He's killed other enemies of the people of God. But when it comes to a tenderness, when it comes to a compassionate heart, I don't think you can find a more telling example than chapter 9. When I look at this, I see a side of David that most people would not even think about. We think of David as being a rough, tough warrior. But can I tell you that I think that the reason that David was so successful as a warrior is because the touch of God was upon him. But let me tell you, the same guy that was the warrior that could kill a 9.5-foot giant, that's the same guy that had a heart that could write a poem and write a song in the Psalms. And so, as one writer had in a book back in the 70s, and I know because I read the book, I mean, here I am, I'm a college kid, and I'm wanting to be a good husband, and the title of the book was Man of Steel and Man of Velvet. Anybody remember that book? Nobody. Okay. Well, I read the book. I wanted to be a strong man, but I wanted to be a tender man. And that's what you see with David. And so, as he's thinking, who can I show this kindness to? And can I tell you that the first, I guess, maybe thought of the gospel is found in verse 1. He said, is there yet any? Is that not the gospel? Whosoever will. Any means any. And so therefore it didn't have to be Mephibosheth. It could have been someone else. If they were of the lineage of Saul, they could have received the kindness, because that's the way that David phrased it. Is there any of the household of Saul that I can show a kindness to? Now I want you to look with me at verse 2. And there was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they called him unto David, the king said unto him, art thou Ziba? And he said, thy servant is he. And the king said, is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him? That's where the title of the message comes from, right there. Showing the kindness of God. Can I tell you, it's a more beautiful thing for you to show kindness than it is to show what I would call strength and toughness? One of the traits that we ought to try to emulate that Jesus had One of the things that we ought to try to enhance in our own life, we ought to be kind to people. People have a tough time. Sometimes when you meet people, you think you're the only one having a tough day. The bottom line is this: everybody has tough days from time to time. And I've known of people that have gone into a restaurant and maybe the waitress didn't take care of them as well as they should have, and they would do something like this. Maybe they'd leave a nickel on the table as a tip. Can I tell you, don't do that. Those folks need to see Christ. And if the coffee's cold, just say, "Could you warm this up, please?" Just do it in a kind way. No sense in being ugly. I heard a preacher say one time, he went into a restaurant to get a cup of coffee. The coffee was only about $2 at that time. And he said, I couldn't get a refill. He said the waitress was grouchy. He said she brought the check over and she just threw it down on the table. And he said, "So I just left a $20 bill for a $2 cup of coffee." And he said, "I walked out the door after telling her, you know, the money's on the table." He said, "Before I could get in my car, she came bursting through the door. And she said, 'Mister, I don't understand.' She said, 'I was rude to you. I didn't serve you correctly. And yet you left an $18 tip. Why did you do that?' He said, 'Because I thought that you probably were having a tough day.' And she started crying. And she began to tell him about the problems that she had. And right there in the parking lot, he had a chance to witness to her, give her the gospel, and she trusted Christ in the parking lot. You don't ever know when the people that you come in contact with need just a kind word from you. And so David, he says, "Ziba, do you know any of Saul's house that I can show a kindness to?" And Ziba said unto the king, "Jonathan." Well, can I just kind of read between the lines here? When he said Jonathan, I think David's ears perked. Because there was nobody in Saul's house that he loved any more than Jonathan. And he said, "Jonathan hath yet a son which is lame on his feet." I want you to keep that in mind. You see how that any could get the kindness? And whosoever will may come. But can I tell you that you and I are lame and we can't get to God on our own? How did Mephibosheth, which we've not read his name yet, but how did he become lame? Hold your place in chapter 9, and I want you to back up to chapter 4. We covered this several weeks ago when I was in chapter 4. But I want you to look with me at verse 4. "And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel." You remember what they're talking about? At the end of 1 Samuel, you have the valley of Jezreel. There's a battle going on between the Philistines and Saul's army, the Israelites. The Philistines win, and they end up killing Saul, killing Jonathan, and they are just basically wreaking havoc on Israel. Well, what takes place when a king is killed and someone is going to take over? Usually the first thing they do is they start going after any of the descendants of the royal family. And so what you've got is you've got this little boy that belonged to Jonathan. He's 5 years old, and his nurse took him up. In other words, she grabbed him up, a little 5-year-old boy, and she began running. And as she fled, it came to pass, as she made haste to flee, she's trying to run as fast as she can possibly run, that he fell. That means that somehow he slipped out of her arms. I don't know if that means he was wiggling too much. I don't know if maybe the garment ripped, but I know that she's running as fast as her two legs will carry her. She's holding this five-year-old, and the next thing you know, he's not in her arms anymore. He has hit the ground, and what happened? He became lame. So now here he is. He's probably walking with crutches. He's doing the best that he can do. He can't till the land. He can't do any type of manual labor. And so he became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. And so the first thing that we see is we see the compassion that David has. He remembers his friend. He acts on his desire. Can I tell you, when God gives you an idea about doing something, you should act on it? How many times have you had a thought in the middle of the night and you'll say, I will remember that in the morning and I will do that. Only to wake up in the morning and go, now what was that I was supposed to write down last night? Anybody ever do anything like that? It's a constant for me. There's a lot of nights that I have my phone right next to my bed. If it's charging, it's not. But if it's right next to the bed and 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and I have this thought, I'll just flip it over, put my glasses on so I'm not too groggy. I'll hit notes and I'll begin to put a note in there. Why? Because if I don't, it's out of mind and it's gone. And so David acts upon his desire. And so we see great, great compassion for Mephibosheth. But there's a second thing that I want you to see tonight, and that is the coming for Mephibosheth. Now, just that little second point there, the coming for Mephibosheth, that has got to create a little fear in the heart of Mephibosheth. Now, why do I say that could create a little fear in the heart of him? Because in Eastern cultures, when one family had the king die and someone else took over, the preceding king's family usually were murdered. You have that throughout the Bible. Do you remember after Solomon died and the kingdom split and you had Jeroboam go north and you had Rehoboam go south? If you look at what happened in the north when it turned pagan, and it turned pagan fast, you had king after king after king, and I mean, they were killing them right and left. In the south, with Judah, it was not quite as bad, but in the north, it was just killing, killing, killing. And so that was a normal way of behavior. And so when David sins these people, by the way, you can flip back over to chapter 9, when he sends his servants to get Mephibosheth, he's got to be scared. Now, where is Mephibosheth at? He is in a place called Lodebar. Look with me at verse number 5, and we'll pick up there. Then David sent and fetched him out of the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodebar. Now, I want you to put your thumb over the L-O, and you see Debar. If you go to the book of Joshua, which we will not do tonight, you will find this place mentioned on several different occasions. And what it means is it means pasture land. I mean, it's a place great for the sheep to graze. It's a place that's wonderful for the goats to be able to be fed with the grasses from the pasture lands that are there. But over the years, the things have changed. From the time of Joshua to the time of David, it is no longer called Debar, the pasture land. It's called Lodebar. And that word prefix lo, it means no pasture. And so what he's done is he is now living in a desert place. I guess if we were going to say in our vernacular, where is Mephibosheth living? He's living in Hicksville. You know, he's living in Podunk County. He's living where there's not really anything going on and nobody's wanting to go there. You say, why is he living there? Probably because he is scared for his life, thinking that he's going to be killed. He's got a little a little boy that's probably under 10. And he's got this family that he's got to try to take care of. How is he doing that? The best way that he can? Probably with the handouts of this man named Machir. Maybe Machir cared about Saul's family, and so maybe he tries to, you know, feed him a little bit here and there. I don't know what Mephibosheth could do. He could not do labor. He was lame from the time he was 5. And so we see that he lives in a place called Lodebar. Where is David at? He's in Jerusalem. And if you take Jerusalem and you go to Lodebar, what you find is you find that it's a good distance away from Jerusalem. In other words, he's not living in the capital where things are happening. He's living in the country. He's trying to be secluded. He's trying to live just a life of isolation. Why? Because if he goes back to Jerusalem, all he's thinking is somebody's going to kill me because of who my daddy and granddaddy were. And so he said, you go and you get him. Can I tell you that the king sent for him? The king was the one doing the looking. And I've heard people say things like this: I found God. Can I tell you, he was looking for you before you were ever looking for him? He was the shepherd looking for the lost sheep. And God found me out. Do you remember when Adam and Eve sinned? What did they do? They hid themselves, and God came looking for them in the cool of the day. It was God seeking them out. It was God that gave the skins and took away the leaves. And God is the one that seeks people out for salvation. God doesn't look at salvation and say, well, I think I'll just keep it for a special few. It's for anybody. And so you've got Mephibosheth that is sent for. In verse number 6, we see that he came to David, and the first thing that he did was he fell on his face and did reverence. Can I tell you that's the way that we're to come to God? We don't come to God with arrogance. We come to God humbly. I've heard people say things like this: well, me and Jesus, we got an agreement. You know, he knows what I'm doing, and me and him are okay. We'll take care of any details a little later tonight. I think at one time there was an old country song, something about like that. Can I tell you that that is not biblical? That's not even close to being biblical. That's Oscar Mayer theology. That's 100% baloney. And you and I need to realize that when we come to God, we come humbly, we come reverently, and we bow ourselves exactly like Mephibosheth did. And David said to Mephibosheth, Can you understand he said one word to him at this moment? But how you say a word can convey different meanings. Have you ever thought about that? When my mother would call me, by the way that she called, I could tell whether I was in trouble or not. You guys remember how they used to call you when you were a kid? If it was, "Tom, Tom, it's supper," everything's good. But if it's, "Tommy," I'm thinking, "Oh Lord, what have I done now?" It all depends on how it's said. And here he is, he's got this crippled man. And he's a man. He's a lame man, but there's no doubt he's a man. He's got a boy. He's old enough to have a family. He just can't really take care of him the way that he would like to because he's crippled. And the king looks at him and he says, Mephibosheth. You say, how do you know he said it that way? Because the whole chapter has to do with kindness. You know, when you speak to someone, just the tone can make a world of difference. We used to have a family in the church. They've both passed on to glory now. As a matter of fact, their daughter has passed on to glory as well. But we had an older couple that came forward. They came at the old church. They came down this aisle right here. And one Sunday morning, and I'm at the invitation. I'm standing there. And the first one was the lady that stepped up. And her name was Nell Blissett. And I said, yes, ma'am, why are you coming today? And she said, I'd like to join the church. And I said, wonderful, we're glad to have you. Just sit right down here and let me get this card and we'll fill it out in just a minute. And then her husband stepped up and his name was Jim Blissett. And I said, yes, sir, and why are you coming? Well, I want to join the church. Okay, all right, sit down right here. 2 weeks later, his daughter comes up to me and said, Brother Tommy, I want you to know you offended my father. Their daughter was Jackie Tanner. And I said, Jackie, I wouldn't offend your mom and daddy for nothing. I don't even really know them. They only joined the church 2 weeks ago. She said, well, what happened is when they came to join, you kind of smiled and said, yes, ma'am, why are you coming to my mom? But then you looked at my dad and said, and why are you coming? In other words, it was the tone, and I immediately went to him, and I said, Brother Jim, I want to apologize to you. I said, I wouldn't offend you for anything in the world, and I said, I'm sorry that my tone was not as kind to you as it was to Miss Nell. And he said, oh, said it was probably me. Don't even worry about it. And he and I became great friends, and I mean, he was a man that could reupholster and redo furniture, and he basically took two old junk Queen Anne chairs, he refurbished them, and he put them in my office, and I had those two chairs until we moved here. As a matter of fact, Miss Hicks, who's with the Lord tonight, she wanted one of the chairs whenever we moved, and so I gave her one of those chairs, and it was in her house over off of Maple Cove until they moved. And so it all has to do with tone. And so David says, Mephibosheth. Oh, and David said unto him, fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan, thy father's sake. Now, I can't explain this. Maybe it's a southern thing. If you're from up north, you can tell me if this is a northern thing. But I know that it's a southern thing. A lot of the ways that a boy is treated is by his daddy's name to begin with. In other words, if your daddy's got a good name, you get a couple of breaks. My dad was a policeman. That wasn't always good, but he was a policeman. At one time, I guess he probably, worked the night shift, afternoon shift, day shift, but after he'd been there enough years, he just worked the day shift. He rode a three-wheel motorcycle downtown Savannah. And I remember him telling me whenever I turned 16 and started driving. He told me this. He called me Dooley. He said, Dooley, let me tell you something. He said, if you get pulled over by my friends and you get locked up, don't call me because I ain't coming to get you. He said, my name means something to me. and I got a good name at the police department. And so don't be just throwing my name around if you acting a fool. And I'm like, okay, all right. Now, I'm not telling you that I didn't use his name every once in a while. There were times whenever, I mean, I didn't always offer it, but I remember one night me and Buddy Thigpen was coming back from somewhere toward my house down Skidaway, and all of a sudden, I got pulled over. And the next thing I know, he goes, Foskey. You got a dad that's a policeman? Yes, sir, I do. He said, I tell you what I'm going to do for you, boy. Because of your daddy, I'm going to give you a warning. But when you get home, you better tell him, because I'm going to tell him in the morning. He let me go. Well, from then on, Buddy accused me. Every time you get stopped, hey, my name's Tommy Foskey. My dad's a policeman. And I said, you know that's not the case. He said, man, you got out of more tickets. It was because of my daddy's name. David said, Mephibosheth, I'm doing this because of your daddy. And you and I need to realize that it's our Heavenly Father that we get the blessings through. When we have God bless us over and over again, just remember, it's Him and His kindness. It's not anything that we deserve. And so we see that Mephibosheth had it because of Jonathan. But then I want you to see that he is going to be able to get material things back that he thought was forever gone. At the latter part of verse 7, he said, after he said, I'm doing this for your father's sake, I'm going to restore to thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. I'm almost positive that at least three times he says that you're going to continually eat bread at my table. Now, can I tell you that the king's table always had the best food? When you go to the king's table, there's good fare there. Now, when you go to somebody else's house, you might be eating something that, you know, you're just happy to have something warm. By the way, I came across something the other day, and if you want the recipe, I can tell you how to get it. Deb and I have tried it once, but if you want a recipe for collard greens and black-eyed peas in a soup, it's a pretty good something to eat. Now, my guess is you're probably not going to get collard greens and black-eyed peas at a king's table. You know, they're going to be eating prime rib. They're going to be eating, you know, some of that stuff that some fancy chef makes. But Mephibosheth, he's just been used to eating simple. But from now on, he's going to be eating high on the hog. 2 or 3 years ago, we went down to a preacher's fellowship in Atlanta. After the preacher's fellowship was over, a gentleman stepped forward and said, now men, all of you are invited to come eat with us. We're going to take care of this. It's all going to be on me. I want you to just come and eat with us. Well, I'd never met this gentleman before. He just looked like a normal old guy. But we had to go to Buckhead to eat. Fortunately, it wasn't but about a 20-minute ride, and so we got down to Buckhead. And they gave us the address, but to be honest with you, I couldn't even find it with all them big buildings down there. And I finally went into one place, and they go, oh, no, that's across the street. You got to go park across the street, and then you go up to like the 8th floor. And I'm thinking, I'm going to eat in an office building. That's what I'm thinking. So when I finally found the right place, we went in, went upstairs, and all of a sudden everything's quiet. And I'm thinking, not a normal restaurant like I hang out at, like, you know, Golden Corral. Nothing loud in this place at all. And everybody's just kind of talking, you know. Everybody's got suits on. And I'm thinking, well, I got a suit on. I'm okay. We went in that place, And evidently, this is where businessmen do business. And we sat there, and I mean, it was like, what am I doing at this place? But they started saying, now, over here, there's a buffet line, and this has got four meats on it. Here is the dessert place, and we've got 8 or 10 different things that you can choose from. We hope that you men enjoy this today. And we had a guy that was with us. And if I called his name, many of you would know him, but he had on a coat. It was the loudest coat. When I say loud, it wasn't vocal, but it's colors. You've never seen a coat like this. This looks like something out of a Joseph of a Coat of Many Colors play. It was pastel colors. It was plaid. I bet you there was 8 or 9 different colors in this jacket. Be honest with you, he could have jumped out of a clown car with it. He went up there, and when he started eating, he's like, man, this is some good stuff. Now, this is a guy that loves to deer hunt, loves to rabbit hunt, loves to bird hunt, loves to hang out in the woods. Country is a cob. And here he is. He don't care about nothing. He's just been invited to this place down at Buckhead, and he's enjoying it. And I guarantee you he went back 3 or 4 times. He ate more than I did. And all I thought was, you know what? Because we're the king's servants, we get to hang out at a place like this today. And so Mephibosheth, he's living in Podunk County. David sends for him, and he said, I'm going to give you the land of your daddy back, and even a bunch of the land that Saul had. You're going to get all this back. And so I want you to see lastly and quickly, I got to make it quick. I want you to see the changes that Mephibosheth had. In verse number 7, we see that David said, your dad was my friend. We ought to make sure that we treat people right because we are children of the king. He said, I'm going to treat you as one of my sons. Now let that sink in for a moment. David and Jonathan were contemporaries. They were friends. In all reality, Jonathan was probably a few years older than David. But when they began to have kids, their kids would be close in age. You had him get crippled when he was 5. They took him. Maybe he was raised down around Lodibar. The only thing I know is this, that David has boys that are in the palace right now. And if you're a king's son, you get special treatment. And so what does he do? He takes Mephibosheth because of his father. And he moves him, as the song that you heard a moment ago and getting ready to hear again. He goes from poverty to royalty. And so he's going to be treated as one of my sons. But then he does something else. I want you to see how blessed he is because of his father. And I guess I keep driving that point home is, you're blessed because your heavenly father blesses you. I am blessed because my heavenly father blesses me. So I want you to see what he said. The king calls Ziba, verse 9. He says to him, I've given unto thy son, or thy master's son, all that pertained to Saul and to all his house. Thou therefore and thy sons and thy servants shall till or cultivate the land for him. Remember, he's crippled. He's got now some people that are going to help him. And he said, you're going to cultivate the land for him. You're going to bring in the fruit. Why? That thy master's son may have food to eat. And he said, but Mephibosheth, thy master's son, shall eat bread all the way at my table. And then it says what the farmhand's numbers were. Ziba's got 15 sons, but he's got 20 servants. So there are 35 men that will be doing the farm work for Mephibosheth. Can I tell you that 35 men can get a lot of work done? Now, there's no doubt that there's probably some type of sharecropping going on here. But the bottom line is, because Ziba was the servant of Saul and Jonathan, Mephibosheth now receives him as a servant, his boys and his own servants. Ziba was probably well off as well. And so he is blessed. But then I want you to see how that it goes beyond Mephibosheth. Look at verse 10. That thy master's son may have food to eat. He's concerned about Mephibosheth's boy. I don't know what kind of health Mephibosheth was in, but as long as he lived, he had a place where he would be picked up by David's men and he would be set down at the king's table. But when this young boy was back at the homestead that had been given to him, he had plenty to eat as well. He didn't have to wait till his dad got back. He had plenty because the servants were to do for the boy the same thing they were to do for Mephibosheth that they had previously done for Jonathan, for Saul. If you look at verse number 12, it gives us the boy's name. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all that dwell in the house of Ziba were servants unto Mephibosheth. And verse 13 closes out that they dwelt in Jerusalem, or Mephibosheth dwelt in Jerusalem. He did eat continually at the king's table, and then it emphasizes again that he was lame on both feet. He was lame on both feet. If you read this chapter slowly, you will find that God's grace and mercy is throughout. The gospel is everywhere in chapter 9. Now, I've just got finished preaching on Mephibosheth. I want the trio to come back up. I want you to sing that song, and I want you to listen to the words that they sing after hearing me preach this message, and then we're going to go home. And so I want the trio to get this all queued up back there.